Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathy Merini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. Greece hosted the Neochos 2021 military exercise in April, an annual exercise led by the Hellenic Air Force, with military forces from the United States, Israel, the United Arab Emirates, Cyprus, and a number of other countries participating. In addition to improving their readiness and ability to work together, the exercise sent an unmistakable message to Iran that it has failed to isolate Israel. Expert Bradley Bowman joins The Greek Current to break down why this military exercise that took place in Greece is significant for the Eastern Mediterranean and why it's bad news for Tehran. Bradley Bowman serves as senior director of the Center on Military and Political Power at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, where he focuses on U.S. defense strategy and policy. He has served as a national security advisor to members of the Senate Armed Services and Foreign Relations Committees, as well as an active-duty U.S. Army officer, Black Hawk pilot, and assistant professor at West Point. Brad, welcome on to the Greek Current podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
So, Brad, Greece hosted the Neochos 2021 military exercise last month with allies and partners in the Eastern Mediterranean and the Gulf region, including the U.S. What's significant about these types of exercises from an operational standpoint?
No, thanks for the question. You know, I served in the U.S. Army for almost 15 years and participated in training and exercises. And, you know, these exercises really help both individuals and units make sure they're ready. And so, you know, you can kind of sit around by yourself and plan these things, but until you actually get out there and try to simulate conducting the missions and better yet doing it with partner nations, you really don't know how ready you are. So the ability to plan and conduct tactical and operational, in this case, air combat missions, makes you more ready and makes it so that you can work more effectively with partner nations. And that has a national security benefit, obviously. And it also has a deterrent benefit in terms of sending a message to others that you're prepared and able to defend your interests.
Can you walk our listeners through maybe, you know, some of the things that were conducted during this exercise?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, it was in April, so it ran from April 12th to 22nd. And like I said, they planned and conducted a number of tactical and operational air combat missions. Some specific examples are air-to-ground strike missions, so aircraft hitting targets on the ground, defensive counter-air, in other words, defending against aerial attack from another nation, and then close air support missions. That is where you're supporting friendly troops on the ground who are under attack by targeting the enemy forces on the ground. So those were some of the three key tactical and operation mission areas that were rehearsed in this exercise, which occurred in Greek airspace over western and central Greece, and also in the central and southeastern Aegean Sea.
What about when we look at this from a strategic and diplomatic angle? What do exercises like these help accomplish on that front? I know you mentioned, you know, deterrence and sending a message.
Yeah, you know, the name of the center that I'm honored to help lead underneath the leadership of former National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster is the Center on Military and Political Power. And sometimes people ask me, you know, why do we have that name or what's the point? Well, the point is, you know, we don't have a military or do these military exercises just for the heck of it. We do it to protect and defend something. And that brings you quickly into the political realm. And we defend and achieve political interests and objectives with military power. So we do these things to send a message to friends and allies that, you know, we're reliable and capable, and also to send messages to adversaries and potential adversaries that we have the means to defend ourselves. We don't want conflict. And that's where you get into the concept of deterrence. And deterrence comes in two primary forms. I can either deter you by saying that if you initiate aggression, that the consequences or cost of that aggression will be too high, so you won't even try it in the first place. That's called deterrence by punishment. And the other kind of deterrence is deterrence by denial. In other words, you, the aggressor, are not going to be able to accomplish your objective, so don't even try. And that's deterrence by denial. So these kind of exercises help us protect what we think is worth defending. It sends messages to friends and foes alike and helps increase deterrence, which thankfully helps make conflicts less likely and shorter in duration when they arise.
Given your focus at the FDD on U.S. defense strategy and power, how does this exercise specifically fit into the broader U.S. strategy when we look at the Eastern Mediterranean and the Gulf?
Thanks for that. You know, when I look at the Eastern Mediterranean and the Gulf, I see lots going on. I mean, obviously, your listeners know for centuries, or even millennia, the Eastern Mediterranean has been the crossroads of the world and has been ground in maritime domains that have been contested throughout, you know, recorded history. And so the United States has, along with our allies and partners, certainly Greece, obviously, have core interests there. You know, great power competition with Russia is happening in the Eastern Mediterranean. We have, you know, NATO allies like Greece there in that region. We have Cyprus, Israel, And then we have what I would consider a more belligerent nations like Turkey, which is a NATO ally, but hasn't been acting like one. And then if you look over at the Gulf, of course, the 2018 National Defense Strategy identified five major adversaries or challenges for the United States. And one of those was the Islamic Republic of Iran. And we can talk about that more in a minute if you want. But I think this exercise that Greece hosted in April really sent a helpful, positive, and important message to Turkey, more specifically Erdogan, and then certainly, and this is maybe the story that a lot of people aren't tracking as closely, a message to the Islamic Republic of Iran.
In your piece, you noted, Brad, that the leaders in Tehran are surely taking note of this exercise. Why is this exercise in the East Med on, you know, Iran's radar?
It's a welcome question and one I focused on in my defense news piece. You know, you started our conversation by listing who attended. So, like I said, Greece hosted this, but they graciously invited the United States, Israel, the United Arab Emirates, Cyprus, and others to join. And so those two attendees right there, Israel and the United Arab Emirates, is very significant. You know, some of your listeners may know that in 2020, last year, Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain developed what's called the Abraham Accords, basically a normalization of relations. So, you know, after Egypt and Jordan from decades ago, the third and fourth Arab countries to normalize relations with Israel. And that's a big deal. Why is that a big deal? It's a big deal because since 1979 in the Iranian Revolution, the extremists in the regime there have tried to divide their adversaries, right? That's good old-fashioned, you know, Sun Tzu strategy, right? Unify the good guys and divide the adversaries. Iran has tried to divide its adversaries and isolate Israel. And to do that, they've perpetuated this myth, in my view, that Israel is the threat to regional security rather than Iran itself. Iran, after all, is, you know, in my view, the world's leading exporter of terrorism. They fund and support Hezbollah and Hamas, some of these groups, frankly, that Erdogan has played nice with too often. And so what's happening with these Abraham Accords is that, you know, leaders in the Arab world have long understood that really Iran is the problem, not Israel. They had to say otherwise, in some cases, to satisfy or appease populations that weren't tracking all the facts. But the Abraham Accords allowed them to finally match private understanding with public action. And so this exercise in Greece, tying it all together, was the first time post-2020 Abraham Accords where you've had Israel, Israeli service members, and United Arab Emirates service members training together. And, you know, and reports from people who were there said that, you know, there was great interactions between all parties, and that would include Israel and United Arab Emirates. So this really undercuts the 40-plus year strategy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, where they've tried to divide and stoke tension between Israel and its Arab neighbors, and over the long term can really begin to develop a more unified and military capable coalition to push back on the aggression of Tehran, thereby making it less likely or less successful.
You wrote in your piece that as recently as 2018, some apparently took efforts to hide Israel's participation in the INEOS exercise, wanting to avoid probably any awkwardness with the UAE. And now with the Abraham Accords, we're seeing that this can be institutionalized, it can move forward and really grow. So what additional opportunities do you see for these countries following not only the Abraham Accords, but exercises like these?
It's a great question. Thanks. And so in addition to the military benefits, right, the individual and unit benefits, the ability to increase a nation's own military readiness and to be able to operate more effectively with other militaries, a term those in the military call interoperability, you also have these diplomatic and strategic effects. And in my view, we want to keep this going. We want to build on this great momentum from the exercise last month. And there's a number of ways to do that. You know, and obviously Greece is the host and Greece can and should decide who, you know, if you're throwing the party, you decide who gets invited and full deference to the sovereign nation of Greece. But I would note that as is common with military exercise, you have observer nations that aren't actually participating actively in the training, but they're there in an observer status just to kind of watch and see and learn and talk and build relations more informally. Well, in the exercise last month in Greece, Egypt and Jordan were there as official observers. That was, you know, gracious of Greece to invite them. So a next logical step would be, if Greece is willing, is to invite Egypt and Jordan to actually join the exercise next year. And so, you know, imagine that. How cool would that be to have Americans, Greeks, Israelis, Egyptians, Emiratis, and Jordanians and others all training side by side saying, you know what, we stand for the rule of law, we stand for defending our common interests, and we stand against aggression wherever it may come from. So I think it would be wonderful if Greece might consider inviting Egypt and Jordan to next year's exercise. And there you would have, you know, three of the four countries that have normalized relations with Israel participating. Maybe they could even invite Bahrain, for example, and that would be all four. By the way, that would send a really positive signal to other Arab countries that are saying, hey, do we want to take the same step as other Arab countries have and say, well, my goodness, look at these benefits. And so that it might actually incentivize other Arab countries to follow suit. So that's one example. Another would be, there's an exercise, and I've written on this and published on this separately. There's an exercise hosted by the United Arab Emirates called the Iron Union Exercise. This is a bilateral exercise that UAE hosts, where they invite the United States, and a lot of it is focused on ground combat, these sorts of issues. You know, I published a year or so ago the suggestion that UAE might consider inviting Israel to that. Mark Dubowitz, our CEO at FTD, asked the Emirati ambassador about this last year, last October, and he was generally favorable to the idea. And so to me, this is an absolute no-brainer that UAE might consider doing that if they wanted to. And then lastly, I would say we conduct a lot of important training and exercise events in the United States. So I would hope that the Pentagon and the State Department might look for opportunities to establish American, Arab, and Israeli combined training opportunities in the United States. And then one last one, sorry, I said three, I'll throw in a fourth, is that, and really focused on the Eastern Mediterranean. But there's been a lot of great progress in the last 2 or 3 years between Cyprus, Greece, Israel, and the United States in terms of saying that, you know, we stand for the rule of law, we stand against Erdogan's gunboat diplomacy when it comes to maritime boundaries and energy resources. So I think it would be really good to establish a new exercise, maybe even an annual or every 2 year exercise, where you have Greece, Cyprus, Israel, United States, and maybe invite Egypt as well to conduct maritime exercises focused on energy security in the Eastern Mediterranean. You start simple, right? And then you can make it more complex each year. And again, you'd get those both those military and those diplomatic benefits. Sending the message that really, if anyone wants to be an aggressor in the maritime energy domain in the Eastern Mediterranean, they're not just picking on Cyprus or some other country, they're picking on the whole group of people. And that might make the bully think twice, as we all learned on the playground.
Brad, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current. It was great chatting with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
In other news, Greece allowed restaurants and bars to open from Monday as it took a further step towards easing coronavirus restrictions ahead of the planned start of the tourist season on May 15th. Cafes, restaurants, and bars, which had been shut to all but takeout and delivery services when lockdown-type measures were imposed in early November, reopened for outdoor seated service only. Greece has been gradually easing restrictions despite stubbornly high infection rates and hospitalizations that have strained its health system. As cheap self-testing and vaccinations gather pace, however, the government has started easing restrictions and hopes to avoid another lost summer for the tourist sector. Meanwhile, the vaccine appointment booking system is now open to all those aged 30 and over. Finally, the European Union Commission has recommended easing COVID-19 travel restrictions next month to let foreign travelers from more countries enter the European Union, hoping to boost tourism this summer. New proposals would allow foreign citizens who are fully vaccinated with EU-recognized vaccines and those who arrive from countries with a good epidemiological situation to enter. The new rules also include a so-called emergency break, which would allow member states to restore travel bans on countries where risky new variants emerge or contagion rates spike. The Commission will also drop a list of approved vaccination certificates issued by non-EU countries. A Commission official told Bloomberg that discussions with the United States will hopefully lead to the introduction of a uniform certificate that meets the EU security and accuracy standards. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.